Hello, 103. How you doing? I just finished doing the problem number 6 in chapter 4, and I realized when I went back to look at it that I made a couple errors. One, I had said that there were 4 components of a choice, and then when I articulated the components of a choice, I only said there were 3. When I was saying there were 4, what I had in mind was I was thinking there was maximization, diminishing marginal value, substitution, and the budget constraint. I was thinking about the actual 4 components that we've talked about in the chapter so far. When I answered the question, I talked about the 3 general components: motivation, objective, and constraints. So if you realize that the 4 is just a specific example of the 3, hopefully you're okay there. The other thing I forgot to mention in that little video was that those 4 ideas, maximization, diminishing marginal value, substitution, and the budget constraint, those manifest in our demand function. And so our demand function is such that, just a sec here, we say we put a price on the vertical axis, we have the quantity of some X on the horizontal axis. This demand function that's downward sloping is the result of those 4 assumptions. So you can easily see diminishing marginal value because the height of the demand curve is the marginal value. And you can see that as quantity increases, the marginal value falls. This function is continuous, and that's what our substitution is getting us. The position of this thing is in part determined by my income. If my income was higher, the demand curve would be out here. If the income was lower, it would be over there. And the idea of maximization is that, you know, I'm going to be on this demand curve. You call out a price, call out P star, and I'm going to be choosing X star. Why am I going to choose X star? X star is where P star, the price, is equal to the height of this thing, which is my marginal value, and that's where I maximize my consumer surplus. So all 4 of those components are going to be embedded in this thing. All right, so let's look at 2 problems or 2 questions that students have asked me in the past. Why do we lick our plates after we've eaten a dish of especially delicious food or try to eat get every last drop out of the milkshake? The answer is in the marginal value of our food. When we have a lot of food left or a lot of our milkshake, we don't mind spilling a few drops because the marginal value of that is tiny. But when we're almost out, since the marginal value is inversely related to the quantity of good, our marginal value of the last drop is really high. Thus, we're willing to embarrass ourselves and slurp up their last remaining drops. Think for a minute. Can you see what's wrong with that? The student actually has it completely backwards. It's not that your marginal value is upward sloping. Your marginal value is downward sloping, right? Your demand curve is downward sloping. So the first slurp of the milkshake up here is higher than the 3rd slurp or the 5th slurp or the 10th slurp. Or for that matter, the marginal value could even be negative. Maybe the 40th slurp of the milkshake has a negative marginal value. Have you ever left food on your plate? Have you ever not finished a milkshake? Why didn't you finish it? You started eating. Why did you not? Well, you start eating because the marginal value is positive. You stop eating when the marginal value is 0. And if the food is not exhausted, you don't finish your food. So the marginal value is declining. Well, if that's the case, why is it that I'm slurping at the end of my milkshake? And the answer is that, you know, suppose this is the capacity of the cup. If that's the capacity of the cup, then when I'm finished my milkshake, my marginal value is still positive. And since my marginal value is positive, if there's 1 drop left in that glass, I'm going to be trying to suck it up. Why? Because it has value to me. And as long as this marginal value here of that last drop is greater than the cost of me embarrassing myself, well, I'm going to drink that last drop. All right, so that's a little tricky, but not bad. Okay, so we need to erase this. Erase all that. And we'll look at the second comment that a student sent 1 time. Okay, so come back here, do that. do that. Here's just another comment that a student gave me. We're never tired of making more and more money. Therefore, even if we have a lot of money, we just want more, even if it means doing something illegal. The value of money does not decline even if we have more. This is a violation of the principle of diminishing marginal value. This one's a little more subtle, but it's actually a lot more important too. So what is the role of money? Here's the odd thing in our model. Money is not a good. Money is not something that you want per se. If I came back from some strange country and handed you one of their notes, you know, you wouldn't care. I mean, what good would it be? I mean, it's nothing, right? So money is not a good, and therefore, our principle of diminishing marginal value does not apply to it. Well, what is money? Money is basically, it's a form of anonymous bookkeeping. Money allows me to provide a service for somebody, receive some money, and then I can give you the money, and you know that I have a credit with somebody else because somebody else will take that money for you. So money is playing a role here in our model, but it's a role that's facilitating exchange. Money can always be exchanged for anything. And that's the reason why I always want more and more of it. The reason why there's no diminishing marginal value of money is because I can use it for anything. So I use money to buy apples, but if the next apple is going to lower my marginal value of apples, I'll buy a banana or I'll do something else. So diminishing marginal value does not apply to money. It's not a good, can always be used in exchange for something else. And that's why I always want more of it. Have a great day.